सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहैः ॐ शान्ति 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 good to see you all this morning. This past week I was working on a video, this five essential verses from the Bhagavad Gita on meditation. And that led me to reflect on a metaphor, not a metaphor, it's symbolism. Symbolism in the Bhagavad Gita that you may not have noticed or you may simply take for granted. And that is, Sri Krishna teaches Arjuna how to meditate in the most unlikely of places and situations. Where does their meditation session take place? In the middle of that battlefield. Remember in chapter 1, Arjuna asked Sri Krishna to drive their chariot out into the middle. They're not just on the battlefield. They're on the middle of the battlefield. And that war is hours away from breaking out, taking place. So often we don't think about the circumstances of those teachings. But I believe they're really significant because it demonstrates that meditation is not just meant for the yogis sitting in caves in the Himalayas. Meditation is not meant only for swamis sitting in ashrams in Rishikesh and elsewhere. Meditation is meant for the battlefield, and here comes now the metaphor, the battlefield of life. You've heard me comment, many of you know my standard comment about the battlefield, which is just a couple of miles over here. It's called Route 1. If there is a battlefield in New Jersey, that has to be a battlefield of traffic. It's a dangerous road. And sadly, people have lost their lives on that road. That's a fact. So, you know, we sit today in this lovely, comfortable lecture hall to meditate, but meditation is meant to go beyond the comfortable lecture hall, to go beyond the caves and ashrams. It's meant to support you in your day-to-day life. Doesn't mean, obviously, I'm not suggesting that while you're driving down Route 1, you're going to practice some kind of meditation techniques. It's already bad enough. Please don't do that. You'll only add to the chaos. But I think the message is clear, that meditation is meant not only... I go back to the Bhagavad Gita context. The main reason, of course, that Sri Krishna is teaching Arjuna how to meditate there in the battlefield, the primary reason is that Sri Krishna has already imparted and will impart further very profound spiritual teachings, especially starting in chapter 2. Those spiritual teachings will not be comprehensible, will not be accessible unless your mind has been properly prepared and meditation is a central part of that preparation. So it's crucial for Arjuna to fully assimilate what Sri Krishna has taught on the battlefield. The practice of meditation is crucial. The second reason, however, is what we've been starting to talk about, and that is the battlefield, that Kurukshetra battlefield, thousands and thousands of warriors lined up on both sides. Do you think that might be a stressful situation? Can you imagine yourself in such a situation? Mind-boggling. So that suggests a second application for the practice of meditation, and that's to cope with the stress of being on a battlefield. If Arjuna is stressed out, by the way, Arjuna already is incredibly stressed out. And at the end of chapter one, he has an emotional meltdown. Throws his bow and arrows to the ground and says, I'm not going to fight. So Arjuna is already stressed by, not by the battle per se, but by the fact that he has to fight against his own family members. You know the context. I won't tell the story in any more detail here. But it's stress. Emotional stress. And that's what everyone who's on the battlefield of life, everyone suffers from that emotional stress. Now, it turns out that meditation, the primary purpose of meditation is not stress reduction. You might know that meditation is taught in hospitals and clinics around the country and around the world for the sake of stress reduction. That's wonderful. It's a powerful stress reduction technique. It happens that it's not the primary purpose of meditation, as what we've just discussed, but it's an important application of meditation. Numerous medical studies have demonstrated how meditation changes your nervous system. They call it the medical terms are so complicated, parasympathetic nervous system. How's that? That's the part of your nervous system that makes you relax. They call it the rest and digest reflex. It turns out that meditation techniques trigger that parasympathetic nervous system, and physically, you don't even have to think about it. It just automatically affects your nervous system, turns down the volume, so to speak, on your stress. That's medically proven. That's why meditation is taught, for the sake of stress relief in so many hospitals and clinics. So, clearly, even though meditation isn't primarily meant for stress reduction, it's a great help. Do any of you ever experience a little bit of stress now and then? I think so. So, that's a very obvious application then of meditation. I'll keep my remarks short this morning, but I want to suggest one other connection to the battlefield of life. Meditation for the battlefield of life. Battle, war. We live at a time of war. By the way, every time in the history of mankind has been a time of war, but somehow this seems to be At least I feel unusually aware of the wars taking place now. The effects of a terrible war in Gaza, the people are still, even though there's a ceasefire, people are still suffering terribly from the effects of a prolonged war in Gaza. And hopefully you're aware of the fact that a bigger war has been going on for several years in Sudan. A very, very nasty, brutal civil war with lots of abuse taking place. Very sad situation. And then, as many of you know, in the last 48 hours, two new wars have broken out in the last 48 hours. First between Pakistan and Afghanistan. And these are complicated situations. I don't mean to say one side is right or one side is wrong, but wherever there is a war, there is tremendous suffering. And sadly, the suffering is often borne by the innocent civilians who happen to live where the bombs are falling. It's very sad. So within 2 days ago, Pakistan and Afghanistan are back at, they've been fighting on and off again for a while. Now they're fighting again. And then just last night, Iran was attacked by both Israel and the United States. Iran has already retaliated, and we don't know yet how extensive this war will be. It's yet another war. Now, given the fact that we live in the midst of all these battles, I don't know about you, but I've asked myself, well, what can we do? What can we do about Palestinian suffering in Gaza? What can we do about villagers in Sudan suffering? What can we do about villagers in Afghanistan suffering? And what to speak of Iran? What can you and I do as individuals? And the honest truth is, not very much. As those of you who are citizens, you can vote, and voting, you can choose government officials who are less inclined towards war. That would be one thing you can do. But beyond that, there's not a whole lot we can personally do except wars are caused by people. We are people. We are part of mankind, part of this world. We are, I have to say it, we are part of the problem. And we are part of the problem because all of us can act in hostile ways towards other people. And that hostility at a microcosmic level, individual level, that hostility, if you magnify that individual hostility times 7 billion, what do you get? Enough hostility to drive plenty of wars. What I'm suggesting is one thing we can absolutely do is to address any hostility that might be present in us, in our hearts, in our behavior. If you are a spiritual aspirant, practicing dharma, practicing ahimsa, I meant to say, then there is no excuse for hostility in any situation whatsoever. Even when you meet injustice in life, the way to deal with injustice is not hostility. Hostility will make the problem worse. There is plenty of injustice, and we all have a responsibility to address that hostility, that injustice. But the way to address injustice is not guns and weapons. Enough said. There is no excuse for hostility. Therefore, we can address that hostility which may be harbored inside of any of us. Meditation then, this is another, I'm just extending this idea of meditation for the battlefield. Here's another reason to meditate while we're on a battlefield of life. If we as meditators remove any last traces of hostility in our minds and hearts and our behavior, then we contribute in some small way to making the entire world a less hostile place. And the less hostile the world becomes, the fewer wars and battles we will see. So, with that introduction, we can take up a very simple meditation today. Any meditation which triggers that parasympathetic nervous system, and meditation to remove any lingering hostility in our hearts. We'll take up a very simple mantra. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Vasudeva is a name for Sri Krishna. So Om is an invocation. Namaha, salutations, becomes Namo due to grammar rules. Om Namo Bhagavate, unto Bhagavan, unto God. Unto which form of God? Vasudevaya, unto Ishvara in the form of Vasudeva, Sri Krishna, or Lord Vishnu. So, with that introduction, let's get ready. Close your eyes, please. Take a deep breath. Take a moment to get settled down. Make sure your back is fairly erect in the chair. We begin with a sankalpa in which we acknowledge the fact that we have complicated lives with lots of unresolved issues. We don't want to be distracted by any of that as we meditate. So right now, we give ourselves permission to set aside all of our problems, just for the next half hour. For the next half hour, we can dedicate ourselves exclusively to this meditation practice. Then a brief exercise to relax the body and concentrate the attention. Start by turning your attention to your feet. Become aware of a sense of pressure as your feet press down upon the floor. Feel the firmness of the floor beneath you. Notice other sensations in your feet, touch of your clothing, warmth, coolness. And notice if there's any tension in the muscles of your feet, and let go of that tension. Then turn to your ankles and calves in the same way. Become aware of sensations, pressure, touch of your clothing, warmth, coolness. Notice any tension in the muscles of your ankles and calves, and let go of that tension. Then your knees and thighs in the same way. Become aware of sensations. For example, notice the weight of your hands or arms where they rest. And let go of any tension. Then the trunk of your body, feel the weight of your body pressing down on the seat. Feel the firmness of the seat beneath you. Let go of any tension. Your lower back and stomach together. Let go of any tension. Your upper back and chest. Notice the touch of your clothing that hangs on your body. Let go of any tension in your upper, in your shoulders, upper arms and elbows, forearms, wrists, hands, right up to your fingertips. Let go of any tension. Your neck, head, face, throughout your body. Let go of any tension. We'll begin by chanting Om 3 times, quite softly. And be sure to match my pitch. We'll begin chanting aloud. After a while, we'll chant softly, finally in silence, using this sacred mantra to lead us within for the sake of letting go of any stress that our bodies might be holding on to. And for the sake of letting go of any hostility that might be hidden in our minds and hearts. Listen and repeat at first. If you have a hard time matching my pitch, you can just chant silently. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Repeat. Om Namo
Shiv Vasudevaya.
Repeat.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Listen.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Repeat.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Listen to that melody.
Vasudevaya.
Repeat.
Vasudevaya.
Listen.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Repeat.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Listen to that part again.
Vasudevaya. Vasudevaya.
Listen.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
We'll chant together now. Join me, please.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate.
chant softly. Om Tat Sat. Om.